This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, welcome back, Lucha Lushes, and we are here today with a very special episode of Get to Know the PTBN PWO Wrestling with Words Edition with my good friend Skill Crane, aka Josh. I don't even call you Josh ever, so yeah, it's
this is true.
Yeah, Josh Skill Crane, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing lovely. How about yourself?
Oh, fantastic! Doing so much better now. after we were talking off air after the kind of difficulties, the little bonus podcast we put out on YouTube.
We'll have to share that again on Twitter so people can really, really just get the feel for it.
The bleakest podcast.
Yes, I've been listening to Majority Report more recently, and I loved Sam Cedar was talking about it like 9/11. He was calling it 11/8, and he just continuously was referring to it that way, like it was a date to live in infamy. And it kind of feels that way. But I mean, if we're going to talk about dates that live in infamy, let's talk about Skill Crane on the day that he was born. No, I don't know. I don't even know what kind of transition I'm going to do here. Skill, I guess I'll ask you the first question that I'm supposed to get out of the way, and then we can get into the real stuff. Are you now, or have you ever
been? We have gratuitous questions.
I have two. I literally have two questions that I ask on the show. The first question is, are you now, or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
Yes, this one actually I do remember. I have not, actually. I'll tell you, to be honest, just hearing people talk in our chat in other places about how frustrating they feel the experiences sometimes makes me want to stay as far away from it as possible. I am a person who I love what I love, and my God, I could not justify every little thing to everybody every single time.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. I totally get it. It's almost like there's an argument about live bias. I've really taken that on my shoulders as like my, not really my hill to die on, but it's something I find important. And I don't get upset. I think people think I'm getting upset when I'm having the conversation about it. I just love kind of sussing out the details and saying, hey, you know, this is why I think this way. But I know that's not for everybody. Some people want to just sit back and, you know, oh, I like this thing. Yeah, and that's all that they really, that's like the deepest they want to go. I mean, not saying that you're like a surface level fan, because I've had conversations with you.
I'm certainly in between that, but at the same time, the older that I get in particular, this is something that I've kind of noticed myself recently, is that the older that I get, the more I just want to enjoy it. You know what I mean? I definitely have gone through the hyper critical phase of my fandom at one point. And now I'm just trying to kind of enjoy it a little bit more and just, you know, not take it so seriously, treat it for what it is. And also realize, I mean, one of the things that I think is great recently with being able to have so much access to different product and everything is you get to see what a variety of wrestling product there is even out there. So I think if I'm watching one promotion, I'm watching it differently than I am a different promotion, you know.
Yeah, no, and you got to take it the way it is. But you did say there was times when you were, you know, getting really deep into kind of parsing everything and picking little nitpicking stuff. What were you frequenting message boards or, you know, any kind of communication forums at that time and having the conversation, say, similar to what's going on PWO?
Well, I guess it was more in like the late 90s. Early 2000s, and that was a time where and I don't see this anymore at all, and in fact this is something that I think kind of is missing with today's product in particular, is like, for instance, Nitro, right? Monday Nitro would be on, and we would legitimately have 15 to 20 people in a room watching a show on a Monday night. You know, that's something I can't imagine happening in 2016. You know, especially with Raw being the big product, like everybody I know who watches Raw, at very best by the end of it, they're just beaten down by it, you know, and that's even people who like it. Myself, I've given up on it completely at this point, where I don't even watch Monday nights anymore. I will periodically watch SmackDown. I will religiously watch Talking Smack. I will semi-religiously watch NXT. You know, sometimes Lucha Underground, sometimes CWF. It just depends on the week, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to make that leap because I've been pretty much checked out on WWE for a while here, but I'm trying to make the leap where I can feel comfortable in myself watching just Talking Smack. And I've watched like a couple episodes, and it's really rewarding. Like, you don't need to watch SmackDown at all.
No, and in fact, I think it's a way better show than, I mean, it's, I've said this many times online in particular, but yeah, no, I completely feel that that's the best weekly product that they have at this point. I mean, you know, it's only a half an hour. It's very easy to digest. I think it's a lot of the reason why, you know, NXT has such an appeal at this point is the fact that it's bite-sized. And even if it's not a great episode, I think it goes by a lot easier. And I think there's really something to say about watching a 30-minute show versus having to drudge through a three-hour product on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I mean, but see, I agree with you in that regard. That's why I enjoy Talking Smack. I've even kind of checked out of NXT, but that's not the way that you take in all of your media. Because I know that you love films, and you love the longer the better, right? So, like,
yeah,
where's the disconnect there? Where, like, you're willing to watch a 16-hour movie, but you're not willing to watch, you know, 3 hours of wrestling.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, I did, and Adrian probably is not aware of this, but, like, yeah, I did. I took a trip to Houston about, you know, three and a half, four hours from my house to watch a 6-hour movie recently that I thought was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life, just about it, to then turn around and drive back 4 hours to then, you know, wake up and go to work. And yeah, that was, I thought, probably one of the most rewarding things that I've done in a really long time in terms of what I got out of my time that I spent. But a lot of that was also, you know, getting to hang out with friends and do it like a road trip thing and all that kind of stuff was part of it. But yeah, I do have infinite patience when it comes to watching like a film or something, but I guess it's because I treat it more like an art versus wrestling. I don't, generally speaking, I mean, there's exceptions to every rule. There's definitely been art in wrestling, you know, but I don't really watch art. I mean, wrestling in the same way that I would, you know, something that I would treat with a higher level of reverence, I guess.
Yeah, I can totally get that. Adrian, yeah. I think that the 6-hour movie might be something you're interested in. I don't know if you want to get in on that a little.
I was going to ask, what was this movie about? And how did you hear about it? And how was your experience watching it? I mean, it's got to be a pretty visceral experience to sit there and watch a six hour movie. So what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, so it was, there's an artist, his name's Matthew Barney. He's probably my favorite artist in the world. He's mostly a sculpturist. But he also has made, several films. The first thing that I really became acquainted with him was, a 5-film piece that he did called The Cream Master Cycle. It's about 7.5 hours or so. Through various means, I was never supposed to see this. It's a very controlled thing, I guess, is the best way to explain it. They would sell the copies of the film. There was a limited edition of, say, I think it was like 10 of each movie. And they put them in a encased, like a vitrine is what they call it, which is basically like a table floated up with some legs. Generally glass open, presenting it as a piece of art. And it was a Laserdisc originally. And then some lovely, lovely, lovely human that I guess felt that art should not be exclusive and should actually be something that is shared with the masses, even though it was never intended to be. They leaked it online, the entire thing, and I've seen it, and it's, you know, amazing, and I've shown it to friends, and granted, it's one of those things where if you show it to 95% to 99% of the people on the earth, they're going to hate it, and I could 100% understand why. It's tedious, it's long, it's challenging, it doesn't have a narrative, it's, you know, you have to interpret things on a really deep level. I guess to get back to why this movie appealed to me is kind of the same thing, where with Cream Master Cycle, I have a 700-page book and five like 100-page books or so that sort of break down all the aspects of it, from the art to the symbolism to, you know, each meaning of every single piece within it. And to me, being able to study something in that depth is really intriguing. So that's what this movie was it was called River of Fundament, and it was the 6-hour movie. But to explain what it's about, I think would it's probably more difficult of a conversation than I think I would ever have trying to explain anything else I've ever seen or experienced. And I think B, it would not do it any justice. But just a very, very interesting film. There were parts of it that had no dialogue. Like, there was almost a 2-hour segment that was just noises. Wow. You know, for instance. Yeah. And I thought it was, by the end of that segment, I could not believe what I sat through just then, because it was broken up into 3 segments. They would, after about, you know, 2 hours, they would let us go use the bathroom or whatever, basically, and start it back up again.
Oh, so you had some, what are they called, interludes, or what's the...
Like intermissions.
Intermissions,
yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah, like 10 minutes in between. And, yeah, so that was cool because, you know, at least we got to stretch our legs and everything, because, yeah, 6 hours sitting there, and the chairs also, you know, eventually become not comfortable. But, yeah, I don't know how to explain it, really, to be honest. It was just one of those things where I think that everybody should experience something like that once in their lives, whether or not they love it, hate it. But I think it's hard not to appreciate something that goes to that length to be interesting, I guess, if you will. But it was, I mean, the basic gist of it was that Norman Mailer, you know, the author who has passed away, it was awake at his house, is what it started off as, with all of his friends gathered, and then it kind of splinters off to a bunch of different you know, subplots and different realities and that sort of thing.
That sounds really interesting. I don't know if I personally would have the patience to sit through that, but I like to think that I would want to do that someday, you know what I mean? Because I've heard of those movies. There's somebody I read about the other day, they did like a 16-hour long movie or something like that. It was something insane like that, and it would be an interesting experience to do it. But that sounds really cool that you were able to get out there and do it. How far of a drive, you said 4 hours to get there or something?
Yeah, about 4 hours or so each way.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know if I could see myself doing that though. Realistically, do you see yourself doing that, something like that, Tim? Realistically, I mean, you watch 3-hour matches. Like, no. I almost feel like you could, in a way.
Yeah, like, I mean, for me, a long trip has never been an issue. I don't mind long trips. Like, if I can listen to podcasts or watch something, and then, I mean, sitting there watching the movie, I'd probably be into it, but I don't know that I ever would, because I'm just not a movie person, generally. So, but I wanted to go back to my original question when we first awkwardly started the podcast, just to put Skill even more on the spot. I know it's really difficult for you to describe what it was like watching that movie, but could you also describe being born?
I believe there was some darkness, and then there was some light, and I think I was pretty upset to be out. And I heard actually a little bit about my birth, though, interestingly enough. My mom is deathly allergic to morphine.
Okay.
And so they decided to pump her full of it.
Oh, geez.
And she started hallucinating while she was having me, apparently, and thought that the lights that were above her were snakes and that they were coming down to get her and that the doctors were trying to murder her. So she was pushing me out while trying to fight doctors and snakes.
Wow.
Well, in a way, giving birth is like you're being murdered in a way. I mean, you have something being torn out of your body, you know, like that's got to feel like death at some point, I would think.
Sounded like it. I mean, I don't personally remember that part because I was a little young at the time.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, but
I've heard secondhand that it was pretty scary.
Well, there's the idea of like imprinting, like even if you weren't cognizant of it. You were there in that. So like the emotion of the moment could still have been transferred to you, even if you weren't really cognizant of it. And then like, you know, as you are continuously told that story, I just think in some ways it almost doesn't surprise me that you would come in that way, just because of not who, like, I don't mean like in a bad way, obviously, but you know, you're an artistic guy, correct? Like you do a lot of art. You're into watching 6-hour movies. You have a certain personality that I don't think it seems that crazy that you would have came into the world in such a high stress situation.
The snakes were involved in my birth.
Yes, exactly. Even if they were imaginary, just because, I mean, shit, Skill, you come across pretty unflappable for the most part. I know you get upset here and there, but you just seem like a guy who's, yeah, just got like, you know, whatever life comes your way, you're like into it. You're interested in like experiencing a lot of different cool stuff because, you know, it was kind of a traumatic first experience. So it's like, well, what could be worse? Am I wrong there in kind of my assessment of you?
No, I'd say pretty fair. I mean, when I'm at work, maybe I would disagree with that, but that's a whole different story. In the shoot job, as the kids say. but that's definitely not when I feel like I'm myself, if that makes sense.
No, totally.
In everyday life, when I'm not feeling beaten down by the world, or when we don't have a election that crushes my soul, I'm generally speaking pretty easygoing. I've been pretty angry this week, but that's definitely a different.
I feel like a lot of people have been pretty angry this week. Sorry to interrupt.
Exactly. I mean, I'm laughing about it now because, I mean, we have to, I guess, but I think there's a lot of people without trying to go too political, but I think because, like I said, I've already heard you guys talk about this, and I think that sort of opened a little bit of that to me, but also the fact it's like, I think that a lot of people are kind of brushing off the fact that we have a system that is inherently broken and we're letting it go, and I think that's what kind of pisses me off right now is that, more than anything else, the fact is that, the person who won the election, if you really get down to it, we're told we have a democracy. We're told our votes matter and our votes count. And the person who won the election is not the person who is going to be elected president. And I think that that's really, really offensive. And not only that, it being the second time in the last 16 years, out of the last 4 elections, 2 of them have gone to the person who won the Electoral College, but not the popular vote. And that, I can't get over that. It's something that is hard to sort of, like you're saying, to be unflappable about. That's something that really kind of bugs me to the core. It really is something I think that we really need to abolish it at this point, the Electoral College, and make it. And it was funny because I was talking about this today with somebody, and I think I was directly thinking about you guys, actually, was they were we were talking about the Electoral College, and they're like, well, we can't get rid of it. And I was like, why can't we? And he goes, well, then, places like California would dictate the way our country thinks. And I was like, and this is a bad thing, exactly?
Yeah, I was gonna say the same exact thing. How would that be a bad thing? There just happen to be more people who live in California than Wyoming. I mean, Wyoming has a population of maybe half of San Bernardino. So how is that necessarily a bad thing? I agree with you. I think you're right, and I think it is a broken system. But I mean, I'm not smart enough to really to have a solution for how we even fix that besides just getting rid of it completely.
Well, there's actually a pretty good kind of coalition thing that's being put together by a few different states where essentially they're going to put together – or they're attempting to put together 270 electoral college votes based on different states that, you add up their electoral college delegates and you get 270. And those states will essentially sign or ratify, I guess it would be an amendment – to their state constitution that says whoever wins the popular vote would just gets their electoral college votes.
See, but I have a bit of a problem with that, and I feel like if
in
it was
what
the,
way
if it was the well to play devil's advocate for a second, if it was the other way around, if Hillary had won the electoral college but not the popular vote, would as many people be protesting this? I mean, I don't know. I just feel like
if Hillary had won the full stop, if you just say period there, Hillary won, people wouldn't be protesting.
But you know that they would. You know that they would be though. But you know that they would be. The people on obviously on Trump's side would be, and then we would be sitting here saying, no, you can't get rid of the Electoral College because she won it. So never mind, right? But because the guy that we don't like won, now we're saying, oh, we should get rid of it. I just feel like it's kind of that way. I mean, am I wrong in saying that? What do you honestly think about that?
No, you know, I'll speak for myself about it. Like, I actually have been saying this since 2000 that we need to get rid of it. So if it went the other way, I wouldn't feel good about it in any way, shape, or form. And I would still have the same stance about it, that if the person who has been voted, you know, and I think that a lot of it comes down to the fact that, like, this isn't 1800 anymore. We don't have people standing in a town square telling us the news. We're all connected. We all have, you know, gadgets giving us news and information 24/7, and there's nothing that can excuse. If you don't know what's going on in the world and you are ignorant to that, that is on you. That's not something that, you know, we need to have our states voting any certain way anymore. But the thing with the Electoral College, like you were saying, if the popular vote, you know, gets it, then we give the Electoral College votes. That still doesn't fix the problem of, you know, half of a state can vote one way, the other half will vote the other, and then that person gets all of the votes. So, you know, to me, if let's say a state has, you know, 20 votes and you say, well, the person who wins the popular vote and that gets it, well, that's still 20 votes going to somebody, and maybe they should only be getting, if you broke it down by, would be getting 11 and the other person would getting 9. So that's why it's, you know, to me, it just makes sense. Like, let's just get rid of it. Then we don't have that question of how to divide them or anything like that. And most states don't have the you know, where the split electoral votes. Most of them just do it, you know, one takes all. And that's why, you know, states like mine, Texas, you know, all of our votes go to whichever candidate is winning. And, you know, if you know anything about Texas, you know, it's always going to be red.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know if that what I was talking about, if what they're working on is about the popular vote in the specific state or the popular vote nationwide.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. My bad.
Yeah, they're signing a pact to essentially say whoever wins the nationwide popular vote, they will award their delegates, their, you know, electoral college votes to that person. So essentially, they're creating a system where whoever wins the popular vote will become president.
So wait, I haven't heard about this. I've heard about some petition going around, but I haven't heard about this. Do you know which states are doing that exactly? Or?
No, I know that it has like I think Delaware was involved, but nothing is real yet because they have to get to, you know, 270 before it matters. Like if they just did this and they didn't have 270 votes, and it's like they're not going to do it, I guess. Technically, it's part of the deal. But I have to look into it because I don't know exactly what it's called. But there is – it's a good thing. And I think that if you're in a state, you know, that went solidly one way or the other way, or you're just in a state where you think this is important, push to, you know, your local or your not local, but yeah. I mean local as well, but like, yeah, statewide and local government to get involved in this because – it might not be too late. Still, that's kind of the silver lining on the thing, or I guess it might not be quite silver. It might be a little tarnished and rusty right now with what we've got. But you know, there's the movement saying impeach on day one. There's a movement that, for this, essentially saying he is not necessarily elected yet. There's some states where
December 5th is the actual, if you really want to get
I was gonna say, isn't that the official date where the electors come together and officially say, okay, this is who we're voting for?
Yeah, and some electors are not bound to vote the way that the state's vote went.
Oh, okay.
And there was grumblings, I think it was like Washington or somewhere, where there was an elector who said that if his state with Hillary, he would still vote for Trump because it's like $1,000 fine. Like that's all he would have to pay for not voting the way that the state went, which is kind of funny to think about. Our democracy works in a way where a guy can get punished $1,000 for essentially disenfranchising the vote of an entire state. But that's America.
So wait, hold on. This is what I think you just revealed, and this is, I think, kind of going to be shocking for a lot of people. What you're telling me is that there is corruption on a political level due to money?
Yes.
Or that may – actually, let me rephrase that. That money may be involved in fixing the problem.
Exactly. Somehow we could fix this problem with money.
Because we're capitalist pigs, Tim. That's why.
It's true. We should have elected Bernie. Skill, I feel like we're going off the deep end.
What?
Here.
If he would have been nominated, I think. Oh, you know what? Actually, so that's another thing that like drives me absolutely crazy. We had Bernie Sanders, right? And the guy was a great candidate. I loved where he was coming from. He had people just completely, you know, galvanized. They were excited about it. They wanted this guy to lead them into the next, you know, 4 years. And what we ended up doing is we nominated people who were the best celebrity at that moment, because the Trump name, you know, because of his TV show and more than anything else, and the Clinton name because, well, you know, her hubby used to be a president at one point. So, you know, we have these brands at this point now, and America apparently is so into brands that they don't really care about going for the best candidate. And I think that's part of what caused us to be in this position in the first place. You know, we had an incredibly compelling candidate on the side of the Democrats, and they didn't nominate him.
Really quick, not to get too much into it, can I tell you guys, I was talking to a friend about this yet, can I tell you guys what he said about the whole Bernie thing as far as him and the DNC? Just really quick.
Yeah, I said,
of course. I basically was telling about, like, I feel like, and this is something that we didn't discuss that night, but I wanted to talk about later, was that, you know, feeling how I feel like how the DNC kind of screwed over Bernie. And he said, you know, Bernie, this is quoting from him, Bernie would have got his clock cleaned, would have gotten clocked clean by Trump. I don't know if that's an actual saying or whatever. But then he said, the guy that was attempting to blow up our system of capitalism would have been crushed by that system, while all the stoner college students never would have gotten off their asses and voted for him. And, of course, the minority vote never would have come for for that decrepit old white fuck. Again, this is quoting him, not me. He doesn't like any politicians, really. And why should the DNC support a guy who isn't a Democrat? It's their party, and he only changed his party affiliation because he's just another opportunist politician who realized he'd never get a shot in hell with an independent behind his name instead of a D or an R. Our whole fucking system is to blame for this shitty primary and final candidates we got. Trump is right. The system is rigged. Rigged for all those fucks.
Well, unquote. Okay.
So how do you feel about that? I mean, I feel like there is...
It's a flawed... He comes at it from a flawed perspective of reality, though. Because...
That's a lot to unpack.
Because his concept... He's actually attributing something to Bernie that's not correct, which is like... You know how everyone, even during the inauguration speech, was waiting for Trump to say, haha, it was a joke. I didn't mean it. I wasn't actually running for president.
Yeah.
Realistically, that was actually what was going on with Bernie. Before he even ran, he openly said, I am running only to influence the talking points of the election and not to become president.
He did say
and
that.
He wasn't in the race until the very end. And like he didn't have a full staff. He didn't have the money. He didn't, you know what I mean? Like he wasn't running a full campaign until it was too late. So to say like he switched to being a Democrat opportunistically is really incorrect. He switched to being a Democrat just so that he would have a place at the table so that his voice would be heard. Yes, you could call that opportunistic, but it wasn't about so that he could become president. It was about so that people would listen to him. So, you know, I mean, that's like his premise to begin with is flawed. So then it makes a lot of the other issues in there kind of moot as to what he's saying. Because, I mean, there was some other stuff in there that was incorrect as well.
Oh, well, that's just how he feels. And the other thing he went on to say, because I told him, I was like, because a lot of people are saying, and it's true, we sort of memed Trump to the White House, right? He's like one of the biggest internet memes to come out of this whole thing in a way. And then he said, you know, Bernie's appeal was solely based on being a social media meme. Trump was perpetuating the biggest troll on this country with his campaign until we trolled his ass back and sent him to the White House. The most narcissistic, need-to-be-loved man ever has been given the job that ages men more than any other, and his number one responsibility is to be hated by a vast majority of the population. So I'll end it there.
Okay.
And
when you put it like that, it sounds pretty fucked up for even for Trump, even though he is the winner, right?
But, you know, like you said, okay, so if this is the thing that ages people more than anything else in the world, he is also the oldest person who has ever been voted in. So we have that to look forward to, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to fall apart.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
He's already... And, I mean, it was kind of... It was a nice kind of best of both worlds, because people were talking about Chris Christie and is America ready for a fat president? Well, didn't the doctor come out and say that Donald Trump was technically morbidly obese?
Yeah.
Look...
Or no, he was only slightly obese.
He is in the greatest shape of anyone ever, okay? Ever.
No, he's huge.
He's huge. Except for his Skill, hands, of course.
Skill, we've gone completely off the deep end here, so I'm going to take it back. Obviously, okay, I guess I'll just put it like, it's to me, I feel it's an art form, the way that you look at it, that's intentionally meant to subvert the government and what you could consider public property. Did you dabble in graffiti, Skill?
I may or may not have had a past as a street artist, if you will.
Okay. And
I didn't consider myself a graffiti artist, which is, I guess, a slight distinction for a lot of people. But, you know, I didn't do a lot of tag. I did no tagging, actually. I thought that was kind of weak. But to me, I wanted to do more of the art side of things rather than the scribbling my name on something. And I was not talented enough to do like the really big giant spray paint pieces that I saw everywhere. So what I focused on was trying to do a lot of design and a lot of things that were, you know, when I would draw like some of the bigger pieces that I actually had up, you know, it was more about doing the art rather than, you know, particularly, I don't know how to describe it. Not a lot of spray paint involved to start off with, at least. I did do a lot of stencils and that sort of thing, so there was some of that, especially on the street. But, yeah, no, it was mostly, like, you know, bigger art pieces that I would then bring in and like, wheat paste up or something like that, allegedly.
Right, if you were to do those things. So would you see the edict in street art, as I said, as more a subversion of taking back public property for the masses as a place to do art? Or, you know, I'm not trying to be a jerk. I mean, you already pretty much told me you didn't like to do just throw up tags. You like to do pieces. It wasn't for you. It wasn't just about getting up. So how much of it was political to you, and how much of it was art, or how much of it would, if you were inclined to do such a thing, allegedly?
So, I mean, well, I did literally have in the last election, I had a Romney Ryan Fuck the Poor Tour piece that I put up everywhere for a while. That was basically their logo, but, you know, kind of spelling out what they were really trying to do. And that went up all over the city at one point. But generally speaking, I didn't go with the overtly political. It was more of the, you know, subversion, sort of making the street a gallery. In particular, what I would do, well, I did it a few times anyway, was we have in town First Friday, which is, I'm sure a lot of towns have it. Basically, the first Friday of every month, there's a lot of art openings that happen. And so there's a part of town that has turned very hipster over the years, but is a lot of galleries are located in that area. And where there's a lot of exclusivity in those galleries, even, you know, where it's kind of hard a lot of times to get into a gallery, for instance. I had a lot of kind of connections that I made over the years with doing this, where I was getting work sent to me from people all over the world, you know, especially Europe, Canada. I was getting it from Asia, you know, just a lot of places all over the world. And I would send my work to them. We would put up each other's work. So one of the things that I enjoyed doing was doing street galleries, where I would essentially set up, find like a long wall and put up pieces from everybody, you know, kind of as a grouping, and almost curating, you know, an art gallery type of thing, but doing it outside and doing it in that area where the people who were coming in would see it, you know, kind of as an extension of what was inside in the galleries.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of plays into what I'm saying. It's like that space is almost being wasted, and it's all of ours. So why shouldn't there be something for people to enjoy there? You know, like if it's art and it's out in public, and it's like, what destruction is really being done? It feels more like you're bringing something to the community. Is that,
that's exactly how I felt about it.
Is that still important to you to kind of, I mean, I don't know. It's a touchy subject, cause I don't want to just like put you on blast, but is it still important to you to feel like you're putting something out into the community? How active are you in the beautification of the world at this point, you know, or is it kind of passed you by?
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of appreciating it, I'd say just as high as ever, you know, in terms of actively participating in it. Unfortunately, there was, because of things like the shoot job and having a house and all of this, at one point I had a conversation with my work and said, hey, if, let's just say hypothetically, I ended up in jail for something, what would happen? And they said, well, you would be fired. And I was like, oh, okay, so then that means that I can't pay my mortgage. Oh, okay, well, that means I can't keep my house. I can't keep all of the things that I've built up to for this long in my life. And unfortunately, as much as it really kind of killed me to have to do it, I kind of had to think in that regard and go, you know, once everything's paid off and once I have, you know, everything taken care of, then I can sort of be a little bit more destructive about that potential, you know, if you will.
No, I wouldn't.
So as long as I'm working inside of a corporate system, I'm going to have to play it fairly on the up and up, if you will.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to wait a few more years, I guess. I guess take a break now, Adrian. What do you think?
I think it's a good time for a break, Tim.
Yeah, let's take a break. I don't even know what we're going to talk about anymore at this point. This is this is just the most freeform episode ever. But we'll take a break. Here's some ads over from Place to Be Nation and come back and just kind of just keep talking at this point. I don't have any idea.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, so one thing I wanted to bring up earlier, Skill, and it kind of just got away from me, is we were talking about, you know, communicating online as opposed to, like, you know, I think I may have been just slightly too young for the 12, you know, the big Nitro parties and having 12 or 13 people coming over to watch Nitro, or it just kind of didn't work out for me at the time. But I know that you, I don't even know if you still do, but you were one of these running to Twitter guys. So, like, what is your...
The what, I'm sorry?
Running to Twitters. I know that you have, like, a shoot Twitter and a, oh, and a wrestling Twitter. What's your relationship to kind of social media and just, like, the digital space that made you be in that position where you felt the need to have two separate Twitter feeds?
Well, I kind of don't anymore, but I did up until maybe 4 or 5 months ago kind of maintain double. And what it came down to is my initial one that I had was, you know, started off just being, hey, I'm some random person on the internet and I have thoughts, and I would say them out loud. And then it turned into, hey, I have a bunch of thoughts about certain topics. And then it turned into, hey, I have a really, really, really lot of thoughts about wrestling, and I want to talk about that nonstop. And then I felt like, you know, there was a lot of people when I started kind of thinking about it a little bit, going like, there's a lot of people here who hate wrestling, who've never watched it, who could care less about it. There's people who could care less about what I'm doing in my life personally, or art or music or movies or whatever I'm talking about that day, or pop culture, or, you know, hey, buy my stuff, whatever I'm you know, talking about in that regard. And I kind of felt like it made sense to separate them. And then over time, it got to the point where I kind of abandoned the other one to a degree, because it just, I don't know, it just feels like everything, especially on Twitter, everything is very free flow in terms of people's thoughts. And I don't know too many people at this point that just talk about one thing. When I first started, like, on wrestling Twitter, as we all know it, of course, I think that almost every single account that I followed, all they ever talked about was wrestling. They talked about nothing other than that. And then over time, I think people got more comfortable just going like, hey, you know, people like following me for me, and so maybe I could talk about my other thoughts on here without people freaking out about it, you know. And I think that sort of just became, you know, where I pretty much just use the other one now, the wrestling, if you will, that version of it.
The that's the at Natural Born Heel, correct?
Indeed, sir.
Yes, and that's the it is nice kind of feeling like everything's open, and everyone can talk about everything. One thing is another one, pull back the curtain on the, I think everyone kind of, if they care to know, they know that there's the kind of wrestling with words Slack chat. And it's the separate, it's broken up into separate conversation topics. And I think, I don't know if people realize that it's a joke, but I like to, like, police the general chat and act like people need to not talk about stuff in there.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I don't know if they get that I'm kidding, because I don't actually give a fuck. But I do love that, like, Twitter is more open to, you could talk about whatever, even if you're like, oh, that's a wrestling account. That person's supposed to only talk about wrestling. I mean, obviously there's a lot of politics going on now. There's a lot of music, movies, video games. You're seeing anime stuff coming up. But I always do appreciate the music stuff from you. The movie stuff is interesting to me, as I'm not a person who watches movies, so I do like seeing what you're talking about. But, I mean, you seem like such a well-rounded person in that regard. You have a lot of different interests. Do you find it tough? Like, do you feel like you get pulled in a lot of different ways, or is it just, does it feel natural to you?
Yeah, I know. It definitely feels like I'm getting pulled. And in fact, right now, I think this is, God, going into this year in particular, I was watching more wrestling than I've ever watched in my entire life. And then this last couple months, I barely watched any. And it's because I've kind of gone on a kick lately with movies, where that's all I want to watch. And so, and I think that's natural for a lot of people. They go through cycles with things. You know, I want to watch TV for a while. I want to watch movies for a while. I want to read books. You know, I've done a lot of that recently as well. And, you know, just getting more into the literary side of things. And yeah, it definitely feels like there's not enough hours. And I think if I had a week's worth of hours every day, I would still run out of time, just because there's so much information, or, you know, things to soak up in the world. And it's hard to not want to learn new things or to experience new things all the time in my mind. And I can't really imagine, like, I hear people talk about, you know, when they, especially when they get a little bit older, when they retire in particular, like, oh, I'm so bored, there's nothing to do. And I was like, I've never had that problem.
Yeah, right. There's always too much to do. But where do you think that, I mean, where do you think that comes from for you? I feel like I'm very similar in that regard. And sometimes I wonder if, you know, am I just too worried about people thinking I'm dumb or not interesting? Is it, I have just like, you know, I guess like low attention span. I always need some kind of stimulus. Like where do you find, or do you even know like where that comes from? Or have you always been like this? Or was there some kind of experience that happened when you were younger that led to you always kind of feeling like you wanted some kind of stimulus like this?
I think it's more, I mean, to be honest, just like general curiosity. It's hard to not, in my mind, to, you know, want to see everything, hear everything, read everything, experience everything. It just, it's, you know, kind of a consuming thing. And especially, I mean, we're in a time that's unlike any other time where we have more fingertips than we've ever had. And why wouldn't you want to take advantage of that? You know,
that really upsets me, by the way, having so many options. Like I always tell people, like, I hate going to the grocery store and there's like 30 different options for like mayonnaise or mustard or ketchup. It's like, why do I need so many options for everything? Literally everything, especially in entertainment, right? Like, you'll never have all, you know, you'll never find the time to watch all the great TV shows and all read all the great books and see all the great movies. I feel, you know, it's just,
yeah, not even close.
I hate having so many options.
Certain things out. Yeah, it's weird how you have to think, like, you know, as much as I love thing X, right? I have to cut this out of my life because I just don't have enough hours.
Yeah.
That.
Yep.
Is weird to me.
See, I say that though, but then I'm on my third rewatch of The Wire, so I really can't say that too much, I guess.
Sadly, I have never seen that show, and I've heard from just about everybody that it's one of the best shows ever. And even like Rolling Stone, I think they had it as like number three.
Yeah,
best show of all time.
Yeah, The Wire is basically like everything wrong. Yeah, no, and everything wrong with what they portray in the city of Baltimore is basically what's wrong with the U.S. as a whole. And I think that's why it's such a good allegory for that. And it's such a, what makes it such a great show. So if you ever have a chance, you should definitely give it a try, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely on a list of things I'm going to consume at some point in my life for sure.
Yeah, but just, how do you get to it? But do you think, is it for you, is there the fear of missing out? Do you have that at all, you think?
Oh, for sure. FOMO. Yeah, positively.
And I don't want to, it's not an indictment, but I want to ask, like, is it important to you that people know that you've, you know, seen all this stuff and read all this stuff, or is it just for yourself? Because I mean, there's, you know, different things kind of drive people to want to consume so much media or learn as much as they can.
Yeah, no, I definitely could give a fuck less about what anybody else needs to read or see or anything like that. That's more of a, for me, it's kind of almost a journal. Like, if I'm writing about something, or, you know, especially if I'm tweeting about it, it's like, this is me capturing that moment, and that's it. And, you know, sometimes I would like to communicate things to people. So there's that, I guess, that respect. You know, a lot of the time, especially if it's something that I'm really like loving, you know, it's like, I want other people to experience it as well. And I think that, you know, for a lot of people, that's like, that's the joy of watching something that you love, is you get to tell people about it afterwards and be like, oh my God, you have to see this too. So I think in that respect, yes, but in the respect of, you know, do I need other people to feel like I'm smart or well-rounded or knowledgeable? I don't think that I am that a lot of times. And Jesus, like when we talk about wrestling, there's days where I sit around and I, like you're talking about the Slack chat, I'll read it and I'll just be like, I don't know who any of these fucking people are. I mean, maybe I've heard the name, but dude, I don't know what they look like. I don't know what they wrestle like. I don't know, you know, their history. I read letters that allegedly are promotions at times, and I don't know what that is. And I'm like, those are letters. Yep, sure. May as well be a wrestling promotion. So yeah, I mean, there's, I think every single person is going to have gaps in their knowledge. And I think that it's just something you have to accept in today. You know, like I said, with unless your entire life is consumed doing that, you don't have a job, you know, don't have any other interest outside of your life, you know. And even then, it's like, you know, okay, let's say that I decided that I was going to take wrestling as my, you know, thing that I spent all my time doing, then I would miss out on everything else that I wanted to experience. And yeah, you have to not really balance it, because I don't think that anyone's good at that. I mean, I'm sure there are people who are good at that. It's a learned task, I'm sure, but it's a lot harder, at least for me, to really be able to strike a good balance. It's either like I go all in on whatever it is that I'm doing at that time.
Yeah. And what's funny is, as you were talking about that, it kind of dawned on me that your reaction to, like, oh, I've heard of that person, I have no idea what they look like, I've seen that name written before, for honestly right now, is how I am with MMA. I think a lot of my MMA following at this point has just been podcasts. I listen to the, you know, the MMA Report, the MMA Hour. I don't know which one's John Pollock and which one's Ariel Helwani. Then Tap or Snap, which I really enjoyed, still do when it comes out.
Which, by the way, we will have another one probably Sunday, if not Monday. So
perfect, which will mean that it just came out after UFC 205 when this comes out.
Indeed.
It's been a couple months,
and in fact, that's making me sad that it took that long, but had some kind of family issues that had to get dealt with that were much more important than doing a show, unfortunately. You know, just the way life works. And you know, very excited to be back, and this is technically the first thing, although it may come out afterwards, that I've done in a couple months in terms of any sort of podcasting, so it's good to be back doing that sort of thing.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's like I'll hear the names, hear people talk about them, and half the time it's like fighters who I've never even seen. I'm just kind of familiar with the concept that they exist, which is kind of an odd thing. But then that made me think about, I want to talk to you about that. Like, you obviously, you like wrestling. I don't know if you care about any other sports. You like MMA,
clearly, but yeah,
which is another combat sport. So I don't know if you like any team sports or whatever.
I like solo sports. I like sports where people punch each other or try to choke each other or try to tap each other or fake try to punch each other or fake try to tap each other or, you know, whatever. Pretty much if it's in, I will go as far as to say I don't even like multi-man matches most of the time in wrestling. I generally like one-on-one or tag at most. Once you start getting a bunch of people in a ring, I'm generally tuned out. So, yeah, I think that team sports in general, I used to love hockey at one point. And I watched a lot of basketball at one point as well. But it was more, you know, when the Spurs were on. And even hockey, it was more, I was a huge Blackhawks fan at the time.
So where do you think that comes from? Like, did you do wrestling as a kid? Did you play any, I can't even think, like track and field or other solitary kind of sports? Was like, what got you excited in, let's say, you know, combat sports in general, and let's say MMA specifically?
Well, I mean, combat sports, I guess, was, you know, I watched boxing a lot when I was younger, and got into kickboxing myself a little bit. This is pre sort of MMA being a thing, which kind of sucks because I really, really wish I would have been doing it around the time when MMA first boomed. I think that's what I would have gone down that path as opposed to doing what I was doing, which is, you know, more, it wasn't like the aerobic kickboxing, but I wasn't doing it in competition. It was just learning the martial art essentially. And it was American style. It was nothing, you know, no BJJ or anything like that. You know, it's just straightforward American kickboxing. And it was at a boxing gym, so that was pretty cool. I got to, you know, train with a bunch of people who spent the entire day punching bags and kicking things, so that was fun. But I mean, beyond that, I think with wrestling in particular, I was around it a lot as a kid. My dad, I think we've talked about this before. My dad was he was friends with a lot of wrestlers in San Antonio, which turned into like what ended up being a lot of the guys that were in World Class Championship Wrestling, were also used in San Antonio and Southwest Wrestling. And my dad, let's just say he was a place you would go when you wanted the party to be around you. And so he knew a lot of people as a result of this. And so I was around this guy as a kid all the time. I mean, one of his best friends is Bruiser Brody. And so, you know, I got to sort of see him as a normal guy. And then I got to go watch them wrestle and stuff. And I, you know, it was a blast to have that sort of environment around me. And so I was really into wrestling kind of as a thing that, oh, these are my dad's friends and they're playing make-believe. And then also the fact that, you know, I loved watching the compelling battle between two people, you know, kind of trying to beat the shit out of each other. And then later on, of course, when UFC came out, this was during the era where I don't know if you know what a black box is or not, but yeah, so they were a thing that if you knew the right person at one point, you could either take your cable box in and have him do a special trick to it to make it kind of open a little bit, if you will. Or you could buy a cable box from this person and it would already be doing the thing that you needed it to do. And, yeah, that was during that time. So I was pretty much consuming everything on pay-per-view as a result. And UFC 2 came on. I didn't see UFC 1. I wish I could say that that was the case, but I did see UFC 2, on the original airing. And pretty much from that moment on, I was absolutely hooked on that idea of, you know, mixed combat being a thing, because, you know, I'd always seen one discipline, you know, all my life. Every single combat sport that you would see before that, it was these guys, you know, do this form, they're taekwondo, this person is, you know, kickboxing, this person is doing, you know, regular boxing. Nothing was mixed together. And then that when they did UFC 2, it was kind of like, okay, wait a minute, you can mix all of these things together into a blender, and depending on what your style is versus somebody else, you know, it would mix up differently. And this was a little bit before, I guess, that was really a thing. I mean, it was mostly just guy of this style versus this style. And I mean, the thing that I think people remember more than anything else now in hindsight is UFC 1, Taylor Tully, who is a sumo wrestler, getting his teeth knocked out by a guy who is just a good puncher.
And yeah, I don't remember who it was, but I always remember the sumo who got his nose broken.
Yeah, that was him, yeah. So he actually got his teeth knocked out and his nose broken, yep. But it was just insane to watch a guy who was 100 pounds smaller than him, you know, almost take him out and really make him look like a big baby who is crying. And I don't mean that like as an insult. I mean, like, he literally looked like a child who was, you know, got scolded or spanked or something and was crying after the fact, like just super not happy about what just happened in his life. And I think that, you know, watching that is like, you're like, holy shit, what is this thing that I just saw? And it's so different than anything I've ever watched in my life. And yeah, at that point I was, you know, that never changed. And I think that for a lot of people, I mean, I'm definitely not on my own island when it comes to this. People who watched boxing religiously stopped watching it almost completely and started watching MMA. And I think that even to a degree, a lot of the wrestling audience went away from wrestling and started watching MMA as well. Myself, obviously, I'm never going to give up on the theatrics and the showmanship and all that of wrestling. I still love that stuff. So I'm not going to stop watching it. But at the same time, I think, you know, for a lot of people, MMA did sort of replace it.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And it's so funny you're talking about that. I remember it so vividly because I don't think I watched the first few UFCs, but it would have probably been around the time that like UFC 15 to 20 had happened, and there was like best of DVDs and VHS that were starting to come out, and it'd be like the best knockouts, and that one was always huge. But now I'm trying to remember the timeline. So you had the black box, and so you watched UFC 2 on pay-per-view.
I watched
the black
everything
but to me, I remember my first exposure were those Tough Man competitions. Am I wrong in kind of seeing those were happening even slightly before UFC pay-per-views had started?
Yeah, they definitely happened beforehand. Myself, I was not interested in that because I always had a thing where I'm not a big fan of street fighting in general. I know that may seem a little bit weird as somebody who has been in a bunch of them at an earlier time in my life. I don't find them fun. I don't find them necessarily for a lot of them are very one-sided. And I don't really like watching non-skilled fighters, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no.
I only like watching fighters who train to fight. But it's weird when you see somebody who is just on the street and doesn't know anything from a training perspective try to fight somebody who knows even the slightest bit. It's generally – does not go well for that person. And it's – so for me, I'm kind of like, well, why would I want to watch that when I can watch these highly skilled fighters try to do their thing instead? And so the tough man thing never connected with me. And for a lot of people, it was, it was a very controversial thing. In fact, like there were people, I don't remember if somebody actually died in it or not, or if they just almost died and had to go to the hospital. Like there was a bunch of that sort of thing happening. And so it had this real negative stigma attached to it. And for me, I mean, that part, I guess, was a little bit compelling, you know, just to kind of see, well, what the hell is all this about? But I don't know. It just didn't really draw me in like I would hope to. I think that the only time that I ever really enjoyed street fighting was when I saw Kimbo for the first time.
Kimbo was something else. He just had a special aura to him. Yeah, I watched it because it was on, and I always kind of liked the concept of combat sports and you know, even – just straight up martial arts where people of the same disciplines were going against each other. So then the tough man thing was like interesting, but I wasn't super into it, but I was just wanting to verify if I remember that correctly timeline wise. Cause that was, I mean, those tough man competitions were on like just, you know, TNN or whatever. They weren't like, you know, pay-per-view or anything crazy back then. It felt like, but UFC was this big deal. Oh, it's, you know, human cockfighting. It's on pay-per-view and it's dangerous. And now that I think back and think about it, I'm like, they would let just like big liquored up cowboys fight each other in pseudo boxing matches on basic cable. It was so weird to think about. It is very weird to think about that was how that all went down. Because then you have MMA, like UFC was treated like it was barbaric. Okay, so skill. Obviously, people want to get more of your takes on UFC. They can get that on Tap or Snap. But we'll take one more quick break, and then we'll come back for our final question of the evening.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Left is from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, we're back. Tim, I think it's fine for you to ask your final question. Go ahead.
Fantastic. All right. I love it. I really do. So, skill, obviously, the final question for the show is going to be people who only know you online, maybe from Twitter, from Tap or Snap. I feel bad. Like, I mean, I know you write articles also, but do you do another podcast at all?
At one point, but okay. There's been a lot of podcasts that get abandoned over at a certain website.
Yes. I'd like to say it's, you know, it's wrestling with the written word, not the spoken word. But other than the fact that your real first name is Josh, which I haven't called you once this entire time until right now, what is something that if someone only knew you from that, they'd be shocked to find out about Skill Crane?
Maybe that I'm like hyper insanely into interior design.
Oh, nice.
I had no idea about that. Are you one of these sink porn guys?
Oh,
I am a furniture porn person. I definitely I lust after things that are beautifully designed.
Do you go on Reddit at all?
Not very often.
Oh, okay, there's actually a subreddit called Male Living Space. I'm not subscribed to it. Nice. I have a shortcut of it on my on my Reddit, because I'm always curious to see how people like to, you know, feng shui their apartments and their homes. You should check it out if you're into interior design.
I'm mostly like a mid-century kind of dude. Lots of curves, lots of, I guess lots of wood, but lots of, I don't know how to describe it, like just lots of curvy things. Very beautiful, you know, kind of sculptural designs. And what's like, once I started discovering that, I was like, I need everything to kind of go together. And so every room has a different theme and a different style and, you know, sometimes different eras. And it's, I just love it.
That's cool. You really need a rug that ties the room together for sure, right?
That's always... I have many rugs that tie rooms together.
It's always important.
But yeah, I mean, I actually had no idea of that. So that is something that's kind of shocking. So like, what do you think about the egg chairs? That's kind of my touchstone. Are you into the egg chair with the speakers built in thing? Or is that a little too, too, I guess, what's that, postmodern, they call that style?
No, that's very much in the right era, in fact. And strangely enough,
I thought it was Bauhaus or something.
No, well, that's mid-century still. But I have been eyeing one of those for quite a while. And I have a space in my room, and I want it to be like a reading chair, because we have some. I've spent a lot of time in one of those chairs. Let's just put it that way. It's weird how it does like a sensory deprivation kind of thing, where you're inside of your environment. Everything sounds muffled. It's just a different experience, and so. It definitely is one of those things where if you're just trying to focus on something, you're not trying to, you know, kind of have all of the stimuli in the world around you, which, I mean, it's really hard. I don't know about you, but, you know, if I'm inside my house, there's 15 or 20 different things going on at any given time. But to be able to sit down and like read a book or listen to some music, it's hard to just do that. And strangely enough, that chair makes it much easier to do that, if that makes any sense. And also, I think it's beautiful. You know, I have a lot of stuff. It's hard to explain, but like a tulip stand is basically what those have at the bottom. That's what it's called. It's where it curves to a flat surface. I have pretty much every single piece of furniture inside of my living room has that base.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's... That's really cool, honestly. So
Hiro Saarinen is his name, the guy who created that.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, again, it goes back to it's your space, and you know, it's for you. And I just think that really, it's kind of a cool thing, and it really kind of ties, just like the rug ties the room together, it kind of ties the skill crank together. I get that based on everything about you, that like, yeah, you want to feel comfortable in your home, because you know, there's so much out there, and there's so much that you're trying to take in, and you need to essentially have the correct domicile to properly appreciate all of the things that you want to experience in life, you know. And yeah, it's like you want to have your nice comfy chair and your nice cozy surroundings while you watch two men punch each other in the face as hard as possible, right?
Exactly. You have to have this.
Well, all right, Skill, thank you so much. It's been a wonderful, even just getting to know someone who I consider a friend, even better here for everybody else to get to know you as well. But is there anything you want people to know about that you got coming up? Obviously, we talked about Tap or Snap. Anything else?
Not particularly. I think, you know, it's always something going on, but that's really about it for now. And like, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to sit down. I know we talked about this so long ago, months ago originally, and it was like, yeah, we're gonna get together and do this, and then, you know, it's always one of the two of us was always busy doing something else. So I'm glad to actually be able to sit down and like I said, not only do the show, but more importantly, actually get to sit down and get to know you a little bit as well. But one day I'm hoping somebody reverses the show on you and they interview you instead.
It's funny you say that, because I honestly was just about to ask Tim, what's something about you people would be surprised to know about?
Exactly.
You'd be surprised to know that I don't want to answer that question. but again, Skill, thank you so much. Everybody, check out all the stuff that I always talk about and follow us on Twitter at Lucha Undead. Adrian?
Yeah, follow me at Della Boots, and I'm going to retweet our post-election reaction. I think it's worth a listen. And I will also tweet out some stuff I'm working on right now. I started a VidMe channel. I'm uploading stuff to YouTube, so definitely check that out when you have a chance. And that's about it.
All right, cool. Maybe we'll have to do a more positive election reaction. Maybe something on the brighter side for people, just so that they don't. It's not all doom and gloom. But definitely check out the mini-sode anyways. And once again, as always, you know, when you're in your comfy chair, when you're in your nicely decorated, interior designed living room, still only three things that matter, and those are the three B's, which are good beers, good buds, and good banter. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good stuff. Oh, Jesus.